go.
Wow, you guys get so excited. You're like, rush me to the podcast zone. I gotta talk about Pizza Dads. And then the second we get there, everyone's like all quiet. They've got nothing to say on this July the 6th be with you.
I kind of started burning out, man. We got to that conversation about how we've all been having a lot of weather this week, and I just...
Oh, yeah, that weather happened.
Hung up on that.
For sure, that weather was happening.
That was the end of it.
For sure, that weather was happening like crazy this week.
Yeah, different types all week.
Different types of weather, just constantly.
Every time I look outside and I see weather, I think, huh, this is probably a good week for video games.
Sometimes weather feels like a long marathon of mystery brawl where it's just different every day.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. Every time you die, you come back with something else.
And you know you're going to
lose. There's one thing that I can guarantee you about the weather, and that's it's summer.
It is.
And I don't know that it's summer from being outside. I know that it's summer because of Summer Games Done Quick, which is that kicks off and complements that sweet summer air.
That sweet summer air.
First, you feel the breeze of the summer Steam sale. It says, play some games. Play as many games as you can, as fast as you can, because you're going to have too many games.
Yes.
And then the kings of playing too many games too fast emerge, and they sit on the red couch, and they show you how it's done all week long, 24/7 for a week.
So it was told, the Couch of Crimson would be the meeting place for the fastest and the manyest, the mostest.
It's a beautiful thing, even when it's not exciting you anymore. You still love it anyways.
Even when it's not exciting you, it's just like life. When life has ceased to excite. Sorry about my mic. Went up there for a second. When life has ceased to excite, you know where you are. You are at the couch. You are at the ADGQ. The SCGQ.
SGDQ. Any highlights?
So, you know, the thing that's interesting about, like, SGDQ for me is that, like, I feel like my favorite SGDQ was probably the first one I watched or the second one I watched. And maybe it's because I watched those first couple of ones where they're playing, like, you know, Super Mario 64 or playing Super Mario Sunshine. They're playing Wind Waker, Ocarina of Time. And then I grew to really like the speedruns for those specific games. My absolute favorite speedrun of all time is Super Monkey Ball. I absolutely love that speedrun.
It's amazing. It's a great speedrun. It's actually a weirdly, weirdly satisfying speedrun.
But when I see them not playing those games, like when I look at the lineup and there are things that really feel like they're missing. Like for this year, one thing that I was really excited and really hoping we would see was a Breath of the Wild speedrun.
Yeah.
And when I see, like, you know, the franchises that I really want to see absent, it makes me a little less excited.
I mean, there's still some good stuff. And I think that the thing that is most exciting about ADGQ is the games that I didn't expect to think were good speedruns or, like, wasn't thinking about much. Like, Hollow Knight was a cool speedrun. I want to get a chance to relook at that.
Because I want to play that game, and I feel like sometimes watching the speedrun of a game that I haven't played kind of spoils me on the game sometimes, you know?
Yeah, it does a little bit. You kind of lose some of the surprises, some of those abilities that you get late game.
It can make
some of the magic of, like, going through a really difficult area. Like, sometimes you'll go through, like, a really difficult area, and you'll be like, man, that was something really hard. And then you watch, like, a speedrunner do it, and it's like, oh, I thought that this was going to be... Do you ever expect the speedrun to end up being more interesting than it actually is?
Or, like, you think they'll have, like, the most skilled interactions with all of the most interesting parts of the games, but really they are, like, facing a black wall, and they're jumping through it, and then they're like, yes, perfect.
Yeah, it's like with Dark Souls speedruns, where you expect, like, oh, man, how do you possibly, you know, get through this area quicker than anybody else?
In reality, it's just that
you skip it. Yeah, you just run past everything where you jump over a wall. And it was always the craziest thing to think about, like, the Dark Souls 2 speedrun. Because the Dark Souls 2 speedrun pointed out something that was just so thematically awkward about Dark Souls 2. And it's the fact that when you're playing Dark Souls 2, you need to defeat these really, these like difficult bosses, four difficult bosses in these four core worlds before you unlock the later half of the game. So when you beat these four bosses, you go to like this, this giant like stone building in the middle of a forest.
Yes.
But what the speedrunner does is the speedrunner breaks out of the boundaries and walks around this room. And it's so awkward when you actually think about the way that Dark Souls 2 is laid out, where it's like, why the hell is the only thing preventing me from walking through this zone a closed door in a building that anybody, were it not a video game, could easily walk around?
Yeah,
I just wish that there was something more thematically intriguing about that area, that transition of now that you've defeated the bosses, the door opens and you can walk to the other side of the hut.
You think it kind of breaks the fantasy a little bit?
You know what speedrun always disappointed me, and I know James is going to probably agree with me on this, or maybe Sean if he saw it. The Bloodborne speedrun was horrendous.
Sure.
Like, I forget if that was last year. It was like, it was done by, I want to say the guy was like Fat B or something, and it's like nothing against that guy, but I think all speedruns should be like, there should be a spirit to
bosses.
There's a spirit to the game. Like, there's like the spirit to the game, and like what half of why I watch the speedrun is to like relive certain moments or see them interact with certain things. So it's like, I always want every speedrun to be, like, all dungeons, all bosses, 100% run or something like that, where it's, like, make it a long run, make it so that, like, you can really settle into it and it's complex. Like, if you watch, like, 100% Zelda or 100% Majora's or something like that, like, those kind of things are fun. But when you go to, like, the any percents, like, I don't really get a whole lot out of a lot of any percents because they are so rife with what you're talking about. They're so rife with, like, well, we're going to bypass 40 minutes of the game by clipping through this wall here. So for the next 5 minutes, you're going to watch me like keep jumping up this wall instead of watching all the stuff that you like about the game. You're just going to watch me jump on a wall.
Yeah, so if they spend like, more games
they spend
as
like 10 minutes jumping through a wall, they're saving time on the game. But you as the watcher are watching them spend 10 minutes jumping against a wall.
Those are like totally games as flawed code,
yes,
instead of games as art, where like I remember watching the last Games Done Quick, like during the winter with the 4-player Super Mario Sunshine race, where they played for like 4 hours straight and they got everything. And it was just so perfect. And like, you know, they're like all dancing basically, you know, and there are moments where they're all tied up because they're all so, you know, they've mastered the game and somebody does something that's like, they're going to go for the big risk where they skip just this one jump.
Like a 1 second.
By double,
you know,
jumping over, and nobody gets it right, but they did it, you know? And it's like, you're seeing everything and you're really seeing how amazing they are at the game and you get to see the game as a whole. I totally agree with like...
That's an incredible speedrun, by the way, though, when you're talking about the 4-person Mario Sunshine 100% or whatever. That one was like a totally ridiculously good speedrun. It's hard, yeah, though, because it really is like, I like speedruns to be in the spirit of the game. I really want them to be a correct category. Like, I don't like ones that are really glitchy, unless the glitches are cool. Like, sometimes they can be in the spirit of the game. Like, I think Mario 64 is a good example where it's like 120 or 80 star. As long as it's not like the low percent star kind of thing. There are, you know, some glitches, but they're very technical and they're fun to watch. And sometimes they're like just slightly more efficient. So people do in marathons go for safer strats and don't use the glitches or whatever. So I've always thought of that as like a good hold up for one of the best types of runs.
Yeah. And I can see why people enjoy an any percent with glitches or whatever, but to me, it's like all the excitement is like in their own head and,
yeah,
in their practice. And it's not translating well to the screen or for the audience.
Isn't it like the 100% runs are about the game and then the any percents are about the speed run? Like they're for specifically not the people who want the nostalgia and want to see their favorite games get crushed. They're for people who already are aware of that speedrun that are like, I know how hard this is to do, even though it doesn't look hard or it doesn't look fun to watch. Like, what he's doing is really impressive, but, like, you have to know what he's doing.
Did you have any favorite surprises this year? I didn't catch a ton of runs. I'm kind of interested in the idea of, like, the Pokemon run because of the way that it ended. Someone was playing Heart Gold, which is the remake of the Game Boy Color Pokemon Gold, and you pretty much, like, save your time by only having one Pokemon the whole way, and there is a lot of weird RNG manipulation in the beginning, and, like, pathing around, you know, like, the trainers that when they spot you, they automatically start a battle, and you want to hit certain ones and avoid certain ones. And it's really calculated, and there's nothing really flashy about a Pokemon game, but it's kind of cool. You do get to see them go through, like, the whole thing, and everything's really tense because of the way that leveling up is RNG, and the crits are RNG, and some other stuff like that. And they do have to kind of, like, make compromises as they go through. And I was kind of fascinated by the thinking about how when the player got to the very end, he only had one Pokemon that was functional in his party, and it was that legendary lightning dog,
Raikou,
yeah. And he was trying to face off against Red, right? It's like you from the older games.
I know, you go into
the
cave.
Like Ash, you fight against Ash.
It's not Ash,
as
it's
the
Red.
Final boss beyond the Elite Four, and he lost, and he was just kind of like, well, you know, I'm out of time, and unfortunately that's the way it goes, so I guess we couldn't do it this time. And I was like, damn, that's kind of crushing. And that's like really like, man, you put in a lot of time here, you know, playing for like 2.5 hours going through the whole game, you know.
Yeah,
it's still kind of cool.
It seemed emotional. And yeah, no, it was cool. I didn't mind that he missed it. I thought it was just like, I never really seen them not finish, you know? And it's like, he had to, I mean, to finish, really, he had to beat that last battle. And whether it was, you know, some mistakes he made or if it was random, like, it didn't work out. And, you know, there's no quick save reset or, you know, just warp around Ash and watch the credits. It was, I don't know, it was like you couldn't take down that beast, you know.
Could not defeat Red. Not pursue Red Trainer.
Yeah, I found that to be pretty intense, and it really contrasted with like some of the stuff in like I saw the Half-Life run, and the guy was trying to manipulate some of the NPCs by like shooting them at the right moment. But he had to keep retrying. And I was like, this is silly. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a big list here, guys.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have PUBG, Player Unknown Battleground.
Wait, you have a big list of wait, are you trying to ruin our segues? Like,
I just want to...
What's your motive here?
I'm just trying to say that we got so much that I want to hit some... These are the things that right now I want to hit. And you guys can give or add or take, okay?
Well, I apologize for not making a grand point, but just illustrating another aspect of GDQ that's interesting.
Sorry. I think it is interesting. I'm not trying to chew you off the stage.
Sometimes your speedrun doesn't make a profound point. Sometimes you don't get to the end with the success you want to see, but that doesn't mean that the trip that you took there wasn't worthwhile.
That's what I'm talking about, because the guy, you know, he had a long face and he was like, unfortunately, that's Pokemon, but everybody cheers anyways.
You know what? That's a great metaphor for Pokemon. Unfortunately, that's Pokemon, but everyone cheers anyways.
That's right.
Right?
When a new game comes out,
unfortunately
it's
Pokemon,
same.
But everyone Woo! Will cheer. Yay, unfortunately. Yay, it is Pokemon.
It's worse than you remembered, but it's still Pokemon. Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Whoa, yay, it's Whoa. Awesome.
Did he
it's
say
the same.
Pokemon? What else did he say? I don't know.
I didn't hear the first word, but I heard the second word.
Yeah, true that.
Okay, so on the list of video games this week, I just wanna run down, because we got a hearty show right here. We got a meat and potatoes. of a list right here. PUBG, Players Unknown Battlegrounds, Doomfist, Overwatch, the Street Fighter, that's Final Fantasy 14 expansion. SGGQ, we already can knock that one off the list. Stukov from HOTS, Tekken Storyline, Platelets and Plasma. And these are, by the way, these are Jeopardy. These are Jeopardy things. Platelets right. and Plasma. And finally, Hearthstone Expansions. Which one?
That hasn't been announced yet.
I know, but we already know. We apparently know what it is because there's a Chinese leak of it. And it's going to be the Warriors of the Frozen Throne, and that's basically it. So we can knock that off because there's nothing else interesting to say because we don't even know it, and because it's Hearthstone. So let's knock that one off.
Are you going to stay out of this one? Or are you going to wait? Are you at a wait and see moment? Or
he's going to say that he wants to, and then when it comes out, he's going to say that it sucks, and he wishes that he didn't have to buy 100 packs, but that he did. And it's going pretty well, and he's surprised that they screwed up again, but still made it fun. And
thank you, Sean. Thank you, Sean. I'm glad I can just maybe when the expansion comes out, I'll just cut that out so that I can replace it when I'm trying to explain the expansion. I'll just have your words explain my feelings for the expansion.
All right, so let's cover everything Blizzard first. So that's Hearthstone.
Okay, so what do you want? Do you want Doomfist or Stukov for 200?
Well, okay, so let's start with the character who has the giant arm.
Doomfist?
Wow!
Sounds like
James!
Wait, do they both have big arms?
Yeah.
They both do, but
they're
on
not
opposite hands.
Arms?
Doomfist.
Doesn't Nintendo have a copyright on cool arms?
I thought the Nemesis holds that copyright.
Oh.
Well, isn't Stukov kind of a nemesis?
Yes.
To be honest,
so let's talk about Doomfist. What do you got?
Okay, so I played a lot of Doomfist on the PTR today, and I played a couple games with Sean.
We played one game.
I played a couple games with. So Doomfist is really, really cool, very satisfying. Unfortunately, he is an offense character, so I don't think that, like, despite the fact that he'll be fun and maybe he'll be able to create a more diverse meta, because I think that Doomfist kind of ties in with this overall conversation happening right now around Overwatch, which I don't know if you guys have been familiar with or looking into.
But the meta is stale.
But the meta is stale, and that Blizzard has this very and I'm not gonna say that on this one. Like, I think that with Hearthstone, the meta gets stale, and it annoys me that Blizzard doesn't do more, and that I have a bad feeling towards it. It feels like they're just lazy. I feel like the Overwatch team isn't lazy. It's just that they want everything to come out super hyper-polished, and that they also have this kind of this real true respect for the game. It's not a laziness. It's more like, if we release characters every month, and if we release maps every month, if we're doing it too fast, some of them might be bad, and then maybe down the line, like in 2 years, you get a situation where it's like, well, there's 100 Overwatch characters, and like every couple of them are really cool, and sometimes you get one that just really is not interesting, and they can't really fix it anymore because it's like the problems are so core to the design of the character, and it's like this character kind of brings down the game, like it's a sloppy character and it's a bad addition. Or
you can always give those sloppy characters that don't add value really cool skins. And
yeah, I know.
Somebody will play them.
Ooh. I know, but then they play them on my team.
Also, I think Doomfist is going to really come together in the meta in the next Guardians of the Galaxy after the Netflix and Marvel original Doomfist series, because, wow, he really sounds like one of those comic book characters.
He is a very comic booky character, right?
Yeah, Doomfist.
Yes, he's some sort of Nigerian prince, and the lore is that he stole my PSP when I was in middle school, when I was using eBay, and he said that he needed it for a present for his child, his sick child, and that could we please send it before the payment went through. It looked like it was authorizing it, and then canceled the payment when it was sent, and never spoke to me again. But then years later, after having sold the PSP that he stole from me, he bought himself a mechanical arm for his right hand plus shotgun knuckles for his left hand. And now, Essentially, what Blizzard has done is they have created Vi, the League of Legends character, within the game of Overwatch. So Doomfist's right-click is a charging, flying, like, dashing fist, just like Vi, working almost exactly like Vi, where you charge it to go longer, you, like, hold your hand back longer and longer, and then finally, like, you release it to go further. If you hit it really quick, then it just didn't go that far. It's cool. It feels very satisfying to use. It's like, you can't use it three-dimensionally. Like, it only goes forward. And it when it hits someone, it knocks them backwards. And if they hit a wall, they take, like, a mini stun and double damage. So, like, the Doomfist combo... What?
It really doesn't charge much slower than, like, a Widowmaker...
Or a Hanzo, yeah.
...shot. You know, it charges to max pretty fast.
Yeah.
And it goes very far.
It goes really far. Like, really far. I'm trying to think of, like, a good way to explain how far it goes. Like, ridiculously far, but I want to...
Reinhardt charge, but a little bit further than you expect.
Yeah. Like, almost, I feel like it's as far as Roadhog Hook. Like, it's, like, really, across some of the open areas, like, you can just fly across an open area with this right-click charge. So he's got that. He has a Shoryuken, which is kind of similar to Vi's ultimate, where he flies up, he does, like, a big Shoryuken uppercut, and any enemies in the area get knocked into the air, where he can, like, either shoot them or, like, punch them or knock them back down with this, ground pound. He has, like, a ground pound on his E, where it deals increased damage for how far he's falling. So if you have the high ground and you jump down, you can do, like, ridiculously good damage, but you can basically just, like, jump up in the air and then use it as, like, a gap closer, but it won't do that much damage if you're just, like, doing a short jump. But you can also combo it with his Shoryuken, where it's, like, Shoryuken, and then when you get to the top of the arc, then you do the E downwards, which is another really cool thing about him. He's got, like, really cool movement, very scrappy. He's got 250 health, which is important to say, and whenever he hits an enemy with his abilities, he gains shields that wear off over time. And his ultimate is every ultimate from Smite. I'm trying to think about who else has this kind of ultimate. Johanna has this ultimate from HOTS. He leaps into the air, becomes untargetable, and then he can move around where the landing will be. And then he, after, like, a short charge, flies downwards and deals, like, ridiculous damage, especially to people, like, closer to the center of the AoE. So he's really cool. And important to say, his left click is a three-shot. There are shotguns, four shotguns in his knuckle, and they constantly recharge. There's no reloading, which is good and bad, because it's like you don't have to reload, but because of it, you get them one by one. Like, they charge, like, I think, like, almost, like, every second or so, one bullet goes back into his knuckle. So if you run out of his bullets in a fight, you kind of get to the point where, like, you run out of steam, so you're waiting a second to shoot once, and then waiting a second to shoot again. It's a really good, it's, like, surprisingly good. It has, like, really good range. It has kind of shocking range and very good damage for, like, how... much it is, like, kind of a sidearm to his kit, how, mm-hmm. like, the real kit is not using that. It's, like, a finisher more than anything, but it's still really good. So he's a really cool character, but, yeah, I, like I said, he's an offense character. He's not necessarily, like, I think it's important to add characters, whether they be, you know, anything, like, offense, defensive, tank, or healer, but... it's tanks that have, like, a big problem right now, and I feel like the way the Overwatch team is balancing things, and they're waiting a really long time to make sure everything is hashed out and really polished, is, like, good and bad, because I think that, like, in years, that, like, their strategy will reward itself in years when the game is still great, instead of adding a bunch of like extra maps that are like, this map isn't that good, or this character isn't that polished, and they're able to like keep a certain level of quality, but because of it, things get slowed down a lot. And I feel like Sombra, even though she's being used in the meta at high level, and Orisa haven't really changed things the way that I think they maybe hoped. So it's a bummer to see characters come out and then to see the dust settle, and then for the character to like really not have impacted anything that much. But
it does, especially when a character, like, it does feel like the game hasn't changed much despite all the new characters.
And the sad part is, like, I think Sombra is such a cool character, and I really wish that she were like feasible to play in like a pickup group, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
I agree.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. It's a more like, I think like right now in Overwatch competitive, it's like a more divey comp thing where it's like D.Va and Winston are good, and it's not as much like Reinhardt behind the shield. But it's like, you know, we either have those one, or we have one of two metas, and they seem to be kind of balanced around the way the tanks are working at the time, or whatever tanks that are being forced onto at the time. So you either have that like Reinhardt meta where it's just two Reinhardt teams, like Reinhardt behind the Reinhardt shields, and then they dive, or you have like straight dive comps, like brawling comps, like D.Va and Winston just jump in, and Zarya shields Winston or whatever, three tank metas, three healer metas and stuff like that. It's like, it doesn't have that, like Overwatch is built with being able to switch characters mid game. And I don't think that there has been a successful, that it has been really successful in that, like, the idea is oh wow, this is the comp they're going for, so we need to switch someone out to make this work. It's usually just like, this is the comp right now, like these are largely the comps that get played on this map and attack to defend.
You don't see high value in situational characters,
not yet, and you kind of like wish that there was more like, oh wow, they counterpicked with Genji, so now we're going to counterpick with Mei, and the teams are constantly evolving as we're going, and it gets hectic where it's like, who, this guy's got to switch off because that pick is no longer working. It's more like they're just, like, they could have almost essentially just picked the characters from the beginning because have them locked in, because they kind of don't change. They kind of know, like, who everyone is good on in this current meta on that map, and that's it. Like, it just ends up being, Like here's, you know, Hanzo's the new DPS now because they increased his bow, and now McCree is still way far out of the meta. And other than that, it's like Hanzo and Soldier, and there's a constant like it's they do a poor part of balancing, because it's like there's a constant give and pull for what is the best in that current, rather than there being equality. It's like situational equality. It's just now Soldier is better, now McCree is better, now it's the Reaper thing. Like, it's just always, like, this is who people are currently playing because they're agreed upon to be the most essential, the most important to every team comp in this meta.
Do you think that's important? Because I don't think there's that much of an influence coming down from competitive play in my quick play and Mystery Heroes games. And I think that's
I mean, yeah,
appeal.
In Mystery Heroes, of course not. You know, I don't know,
no, but you know what I mean? Like, or even in quick play, it's...
But doesn't competitive is weird right now in general, because it's like a bunch of teams just disbanded, and then there was that at last year's BlizzCon, there was that big announcement of like Overwatch League, and how there was going to be teams in every... in different states, and they were going to be like local teams, and then they were all going to have like a baseball style or football style round robin, where you're going to be rooting for the New York team or the Pennsylvania team or whatever. And where has that gone? That's been quiet. And friend of the show, Ryan Galloway, was talking about how he thinks, because he follows this way closer than I do, he thinks that because of the announcement of Overwatch League, it is like suffocated local tournaments, because I guess like the state of the game is in this weird place where it's like, well, it's not like a fighting game pre-Capcom Pro Tour where we know that the community has to make the tournament. So the big tournaments are decided by the community. Like, we're aware that, well, at least according to Blizzard, that they're going to be doing this big Overwatch League. So I think everyone's kind of holding off on, like, well, why would we invest money in making a big tournament or making our own league if Blizzard's going to do it and they're going to do it big, and then they just keep not doing it. So it's led to, like, a stagnation. And then there was the Korean players talking about how Koreans are falling off of it at, an alarming rate just because it's so stale and it's too far in between patches. Like, we need more maps quicker. We need more characters quicker. And I've been saying since the beginning, it seems like the time that you're going to have to add characters the quickest is now. Like, you need to diversify the cast and get a big group there so that even if you're only ever going to hit that, like, 70% of the characters are viable and then 30% just are never see play at all, the bigger the pool, then hopefully the more diversity you have. But when you have a small pool and you're not balancing it right, then you just have even less diversity.
Doomfist definitely adds a new visual way of doing damage, and I like his design, but he doesn't do anything that's quite so new.
I guess
he's got a nice way of moving in and out of the battlefield, but in the end, he's not providing a lot of new interactions.
I guess the way that Jeff sees it, Jeff Kaplan on the Overwatch team sees it, is he says that Doomfist charge up right hook is it goes through all barriers. So I guess the idea is when it's going to be more of a counter to Reinhardt comps where he can fly right through the shield and mix it up. But at 250 health, I don't see that as being super sensical. What exactly is the makeup of the battlefield where there is a huge team clump and it's it's going to be insane because, Doomfist dives in and starts giving Reinhardt a hard time. So now he's got to drop his shield and deal with it. But he doesn't have enough health to sit and stand and bang like that.
So let's talk about that for a bit, because one of the major problems with Overwatch is you think about the last three characters and the last three characters, Sombra, Orisa, and now Doomfist have all been, this is how we're going to deal with the Reinhardt problem.
Isn't it true? Yeah.
Of Sombra being we're going to be able to take down his shield. And then he's he's the worst tank in the game when he doesn't have his abilities.
Yeah.
And then Orisa was here's a character that people could play instead of Reinhardt because she offers a similar shield. And now Doomfist is here's a character that can go through the shield. But is any of this really the answer? I don't know.
Maybe it's I don't know. I think that there is, like I said, there's value to numbers here. In such a young game, there is really value. And maybe, Sombra didn't quite cut it and Orisa didn't quite cut it. And maybe Doomfist is what makes it they're going standard. They're using Reinhardt as a tank. So now let's hope that the way that pros respond is correctly by switching over to these characters. Doomfist is going to dive in. He's immune to the shield. He's going to go right behind it. Reinhardt has to drop his shield. Maybe now Orisa is more useful because she can hold her shield up and isn't as bothered by Doomfist being in her face as Reinhardt would be, because Reinhardt can't just sit there with the shield up. Orisa can drop the shield and then fight him as he tries to come behind the shield. And maybe Sombra's better when you don't have a crazy mix-up character like Doomfist, just diving in and getting a lot of the aggro, having all the eyes on him where he's sitting around, jumping around, flying, sliding into characters and attacking. So maybe Sombra can have some time to work and use him as a diversion or something. I guess that's the dream, but I don't know if I see, I don't know if I ever see it happening like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And at the same time, and this is sort of something that a part of the conversation that has passed, but I'm also not keen on the idea of just a revolving door of heroes in terms of so much of pro play would be based on counterpicking one another of they picked Bastion, so I pick Genji, they pick Genji, so I pick Mei. I one of the things that I really love about MOBAs is sort of
you stick by your guns, you're forced to adapt rather than in-game, yeah, rather than having a quick excuse.
Yeah, it's something that it can't work for Overwatch in the same way, because Overwatch has a smaller character pool. and there aren't two characters that do the same thing. So to pick someone out of Reinhardt and Mercy and Farrah would be detrimental, and it would be problematic, and I understand why it's not that way. But also when the counters for characters are so, or rather have the propensity to be so powerful, it's kind of frustrating to think about just that revolving door. And obviously there's some drawbacks to swapping your characters in that you
lose ultimate charge. Lose
your ultimate charge. And ultimates are pretty game defining for Overwatch, but still, I mean, it's not the kind of thing that's easy to keep track of. One thing that I really also like about League of Legends and about MOBAs is that you know who at any point in the game you can look at the screen and you know who is playing on which character. And for Overwatch, it's not really the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you could consider that like, oh, this player is really well known for their Tracer, so if there's a Tracer on that team, it's probably him. But for the most part, yeah.
I mean, I was hoping for Overwatch League to come out to be the thing that got me into competitive Overwatch, but I feel like everything just it seems too like back alley. Like, it doesn't have the production values and the caster might that a real Blizzard like style production would have. And maybe that's been one of the things that has been making it hard to watch, I guess. Maybe when there's a more like concrete league where people are like winning and losing every week and you're watching the standings hash out, maybe there'll be something more exciting to it. But it's like nothing about Overwatch competitive has yet to like really draw me in.
Yeah, I never really watch it.
I've never watched it. I'm thinking about these problems. I think Overwatch is really fun, but yeah, I think this stuff is really difficult. It's hard for me to decide if it needs a lot of new characters or new mechanics or new ideas or what. I mean, if the current meta is about like rushdown or something, then you kill everyone quickly so that you can take the objective during the death timer and run back. Unless there's a character that like reduces that or circumvents that, then that is going to be the way to play. And then the counter to that is to be like ultra defensive and stem the rush. But like you're saying about like counter picking and stuff, there's not always an opportunity to like keep counter picking. And if that was the case, that people would be wanting to switch heroes all the time during a match, well, you have to die or run back to your base. And then that would maybe even lend itself more to the comps that just run at your face immediately and try to wipe you out. And then before you counterpick, they take the first objective or push to the first point or whatever. And then they get to switch too, you know. It doesn't solve the problem, like James said, to be able to be constantly switching. I don't know. I hope I don't know how much they need new characters or what. Also, like, what is it about Overwatch that we talk about the most, or maybe MOBAs too, compared to fighting games, where you need a lot of new things coming out all the time? I mean, nothing really changes in Tekken or Street Fighter for years, right? But people keep like mining the depths and enjoying that. Is it because it's just one-on-one?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
What I mean, like, there's this like, oh, we need, why isn't Blizzard putting out more characters? Like, do we need, I mean, I don't know.
I guess isn't the competitive games? Like the good, the good analogy is Team Fortress, right? Like, Team Fortress has different guns that change the way the characters play, but they haven't released a new character ever for Team Fortress 2. So I do think it's interesting, and it is interesting to talk about Tekken or Street Fighter, where they go really long times without a patch, and then sometimes forever without a patch, and people are still playing like Street Fighter 3 and continually having fun with it, whereas Overwatch feels like it needs to keep getting updates to stay fresh. I don't know. Maybe it's
is
like
that because of the time and the place, or
is it simplicity? Is it just simplicity?
It?
Because with a MOBA, you know, you have like you have four buttons, so
yeah.
like it feels like there is maybe it feels maybe there's like a sort of skill ceiling that arises, and maybe if you never touched a MOBA, and maybe if like Riot was just like, we're done with League, we're never going to add anything new, we're just going to try and balance it as best we can, and then we're going to leave it like it is and just leave those characters, and then you can play for years, and like if a character gets out of control, then people are going to have to be so unbelievably good and play another character perfectly to start responding to it to change the way things are going. But I guess it's
certainly
like
it's more problematic in Overwatch than it is in League of Legends or in Heroes of the Storm, because I feel like in Overwatch you really only have one way to play to every character's strengths, because at least in League of Legends you have different item builds, and in Heroes of the Storm you have different talent builds. In Tekken or Street Fighter you have different moves that you might use, or you might maybe your Asuka is played as a rushdown character, or you play Asuka more defensively,
Asuka, sure.
and you're more apt to work towards one of those styles. But in Overwatch, you don't play Tracer in a different way than somebody else.
Yeah,
right. Tracer, so like even in a fighting game, even if you're playing the heavy kick character, that character could still throw and punch as a surprise.
Yeah.
They can do everything if they can't do everything well. Where in Overwatch, it's like you're really playing that character.
Yeah, I mean Tekken Tekken is pretty insane because you got that move list of hundreds of moves, and maybe as you're playing them for a really long time, you're using certain moves to get in, and then you find value in other moves. And as you're I think a really good example of how the Tekken like balances itself out and how it keeps staying like, or how it is so insanely deep and how you can play for years and like never get bored of it, is like there are a lot of abilities or moves, I guess, that are, I hate saying that for some reason. It sounds like I'm like a father, a dad talking about video games, like get to your save point, stop using your moves, look at the move list. But, there's stuff where, that are kind of balanced to be used at a lower level and are very, very bad at a high level. A lot of like strings that, like are unsafe and or end in lows are really good at my level of play, because like you catch people not guarding or people don't react to it fast, and you can like, you know, gimmick them out with like a string of attacks that ends in a low, so the person like ends the string that those other attacks blocking, and then they're not gonna block low because they're trying to respond themselves, they're like getting antsy and they're trying to like jab you out in the middle of the string, and then they get punished with it. But at a higher level of play, people are so used to the whole move list for every character that if you throw out those things, they're super unsafe and people can low parry you and stuff like that. So there's just like there's this really interesting dynamic where the value of certain characters' moves changes over time with different skill levels. So it's this like interesting spectrum of how you play that character. Where there are certain things that like you would leave entirely out because they're just not working at your play style, but maybe you learn to fold them in, or maybe as you get better, it starts to be like you have to start using those to stay competitive. It's really interesting. There's so much depth to those characters, and I guess it's just not there in Overwatch. It's like James said, the characters are very linear. Like Tracer plays one way, kind of like she's supposed to be this annoying backline DPS, and you pretty much play her well by getting kills and zipping around and being in the back line. Like, there's not going to be someone who is like, well, I found out the real way to play Tracer is to be a sniper. And you, like, stand, you know, with your team and you fire off rounds and you don't really use her like, blink ability. You kind of just, like, go toe-to-toe on a battlefield like that. Like, there is a correct way in a lot of ways to play characters. And there doesn't, and the kits don't allow for a dynamic usage of that.
Well, maybe over time we'll see some braver and wackier kits that really start mixing
and
things
maybe
up.
People could argue that like team comps are the way that you do it, so the way that you mix and match different characters. But I feel like there is not a lot of wiggle room there right now. So maybe if the thing that you're looking to add like a different variety to things is maybe like, okay, well, what about this crazy comp that uses Tracer and Junkrat, and if you put them together, something crazy happens, but it doesn't. Like, nothing crazy happens when you put together Junkrat and Tracer, and nothing crazy happens when you put together Junkrat and Mercy. And part of it is that the characters are so simplified that it's very obvious
to find the synergies. Like, pharmacy was like you're right. Yeah. Like, pharmacy was like a day one kind of thing, and people were already figuring that out. I think beta, actually, I want to say beta was when pharmacy was like found out, because it just made sense that like Farrah can fly, Mercy can fly to whoever, to any character, and float. So like, put the two together, and it's peanut butter and jelly. But like, you know, the Mercy Junkrat, like, you don't get to use some of Mercy's abilities. You don't get to be like zipping around the battlefield and flying and being like this annoying, hard to hit character if you're just on the ground falling around a Junkrat. So like, there's not really a synergy there. And it does feel like that. You're right. It does feel like that the synergies are very easy to find, and that there's not.
Yeah. And you know, I actually think that there are more interesting synergies coming out of MOBAs. And I even think there are more interesting synergies coming out of characters in Heroes of the Storm. And I think one of the reasons for that is that Heroes of the Storm really is a lot more flexible and a lot more open with some of their character designs. And it allows characters like Morales and Zul'jin to operate really well together, and characters like Oriole and Gul'dan to operate really well together. Characters like Brightwing and like Abathur, or Brightwing and who's that guy who flies on his giant bird?
Falstad,
yeah. So you think about those characters, you think about like, oh, Falstad has a global movement ability and Brightwing can teleport to people. Those two people work really well together.
But or yeah, Dahaka too.
Yeah, Dahaka as well. And then you think about like, okay, Morales can offer a really strong attack speed steroid, and you can compound that with the fact that Zul'jin gets increased attack speed while he's on low health, and that Morales can actually help keep him alive when he's at low health, and then those characters work really well together. Or that Oriole has a talent where whenever the person who she is enhancing with her abilities takes damage, she gains energy that she can then use to heal them. You pair that with Gul'dan, who self-damages, and then you've got a great, interesting combo.
I'm convinced, and I don't want to keep dwelling on small problems with Overwatch, but something I was actually thinking about today was that, oh, we're gonna podcast later. I wonder if we're gonna play a video game afterwards. And when I thought about playing Overwatch, I was like, man, when we first started playing, I think it was a little bit more fun, at least for me. Maybe we were all just a little bit more enthused with the game last year. We would talk a lot. Oh, who are you going to pick? You're going to pick this person. I'll follow you. But there's not a lot of like, hey, friend on voice chat, I'm going to pick this character. You should pick this character. You know, it's more like, I don't care who you are, and we don't need to talk. You're just doing the thing that your character is doing. Same with me, you know? At least in Heroes of the Storm or League or maybe some other games, when we all play together, we can be like, you know, I'll play this character so I can help you out, or show up in your lane, or do this one thing that's going to make like the sickest play. You know, maybe if someone plays Zarya, they just say, hey, I have my ult, do you have yours? But like, there's not a lot of hanging out with your friends on the battlefield in Overwatch, and it erodes at the novelty, I guess.
Yeah, I guess at our level we have like staled down to not having like a lot of like, it plays itself kind of, where it's like you're either gonna get those shots off or you're not gonna get the shots off, but we know like you're like on what point where people should be. We know the maps well. We know how comps are supposed to play. The healers are supposed to be in the back, like tanks, and then like flankers up front or whatever. Like
there's nothing
like
really
all
for
those
us to
things.
Do together.
Yeah, like all those things coordinate themselves now because they're so like drilled in, and you don't really need to have a crazy conversation about like this is happening, and everyone's used to ult callouts and stuff. So you don't need to tell someone like D.Va's using her ult. It's like, yeah, D.Va's using her ult. I heard. we're all used to that. We all know. And now we're dead because you can't really react to it anymore sometimes. I think it comes back to a numbers game, right? Like, James talks a lot about how HOTS has all this interesting synergy and MOBAs have all the interesting synergy, but HOTS didn't have that in the beginning.
Like, no,
HOTS,
it didn't.
HOTS didn't have that when it didn't have the characters, but now...
It actually had the same exact problems that Overwatch has right now.
Like, the interesting thing was that... That like what it's the big cast, it's diversity, and it's also weirdly enough, it's important to have characters that do similar things slightly different. Like, it's actually important to have that. Because
for sure.
Because then you like that's how you get the interesting synergies is like, well, we need someone to do the range damage, but this character works slightly like we need a range damage healer and a healer. So you're saying, like, someone's picking Morales, so now maybe instead of picking the Vala, you pick the Zul'jin because it's going to combo a little bit better. Like, that's how you, even though they're both right-clickers, like, you get an interesting effect to having...
Well, to be fair, if you're running Vala, and you know that you have a Morales, you can instead opt to take the auto-attack build.
The Hatred build?
Because you do the Hatred build so you could stack Hatred really fast when you get Stim Drone. So there is merit to both, but for different reasons, and you need to make considerations based on what characters are on your team and things like that. And I actually think that for that reason, Heroes of the Storm building is maybe a little bit more interesting than building in League of Legends.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we need them both. Just like we need the pizza place on the corner, and we need the pizza place a little bit further down the street.
Brain, and you need pizza dads.
You need pizza dads, you need pizza brain, and you need Nick's pizza in between.
You need Domino's, and you need Little Caesars.
You need them all.
And you know, one thing that, but at the same time, I feel like Heroes of the Storm addresses its problems pretty fast. Like, you consider that people are complaining, number one, we don't have enough support heroes. Number two, some of the support heroes aren't terribly interesting to play. So how do we solve this problem?
With a really interesting support hero.
Yeah, so then they add Stukov to the game. And let me tell you a bit about Stukov's kit. So Stukov has the ability to infest both teammates with healing pathogens and enemies with a virus. So when he infects his teammates and they clump together, then it starts spreading his virus.
It's air communicable.
In the same way.
Air communicable, yeah, like your favorite diseases.
Yes. And then similarly, you can put a debuff on enemies that deals damage over time and slows them. Right?
This is why I always open cough at work. I say, I'm supporting your immune system.
There's your pathogen.
Yeah. So then his other abilities include he has a channeled ability, which creates a... silencing field on the ground.
Hold on, you were talking about your Q and your E, or I believe your Q and your W, which is the healing Q that infects other people, and then there's that ranged hit that marks enemies with the debuff, the slow, and the damage over time.
And then you have your trait.
Your trait.
And your trait consumes them all. So your trait empowers your these debuffs to do a massive heal or a massive amount of damage.
Yes.
And the amount that it does is dependent on how many people across the map are affected with the pathogens.
I like it. I saw his talents, and there's some really cool ones. Stuff like, instead of consuming it, it resets the timer on the pathogen. That's pretty cool. But yeah, there's really cool stuff involving that. I really like his creeping arm, the E. It's really interesting for a few reasons, and it was added specifically to be, as Blizzard said, a counter to movement characters. So it's this, he channels it, and he can channel it infinitely once the mana only, it only costs mana the second you begin using it. So after the effect is out, then you can use it infinitely after that. So it's good for wave clear. But what it does is it creates a large AoE, a large channeled AoE in the place of your choosing. And anyone in it takes damage per second plus is completely silenced. Like they have to physically walk out of the AoE to be able to move again or to be able to use their abilities again, which is interesting because it's like, for picks, someone gets a stun off, then you creeping arm them, and then instead of the Genji or the Tracer being able to jump away, if your team is like slowing them or stunning them or keeping them in place or snaring them, which would be a really good thing, like Zul using his bone, like the bone jail thing, then the person is completely silenced and has no way of using their mobility to get out. And I think it's interesting because it lasts infinitely, so it's good for stuff like clearing big waves, throwing out and creating and keeping like weird space, like a space zone control.
All right.
In team fight. What?
All right, but you're delaying the inevitable, and we have got to get to these ultimate abilities.
Can I tell you that I was watching this at work, and I actually actually burst out laughing at one of the ults. It is one of the funniest things I have seen. It didn't seem like it was real. It seemed like an April Fool's Day joke. One of the ults.
Yeah. So his first ult is he does three giant sweeps, and with each one of these sweeps, he knocks people back, which is really good because this puts him as a counter engage hero, which is something that not a lot of other supports have. There are characters like Brightwing who can push people away, and he does it similarly, but his also deals quite a bit of damage and really just pushes people back pretty far.
It's a good zone control thing, too. If you think about like the range that it has on the swipes, if you're looking at, if you're controlling a shrine or something like that, or controlling a point, you can knock people completely out of the fight. Like the entire enemy team, you can knock them, you can sweep them out of the fight, which is pretty good. I don't think it's as flashy as the other one, though.
Yeah, I mean, you have this ult that deals with a team, or you have his other ult, which deals with one person.
You're giving it to me. This is such a crazy ability. He reaches an arm out, and if it collides with an enemy hero, then it keeps pushing them backwards infinitely until they hit a wall. So if you think about like maps that have like a straightforward line, especially in like mid lane or something, then you can push someone back to their nexus. It just infinitely pushes someone back and completely out of the fight. I think it's hilarious. It looks so insane and goofy. And I just love the concept and how game-changing nailing one of these can be when you line it up correctly and you space it so you completely, like you have a character that's, like, doing work in a fight, you hit them this one ult, and you basically, like, kill them for 15, 20 seconds where they have to, like, mount up and then re-travel in. It looks hilarious. It's a really cool thing. It's really unique. I love abilities that have that kind of, like, global flavor in HOTS because I think of HOTS currently as like the MVC of MOBAs. Like I want everything to be flashy and big, and I like characters like Ragnaros, for example, who's a great example of this, where he has one ultimate that completely burns down an entire wave. It'll kill all the creeps and like maim bruisers and bosses and stuff and kill enemies standing in the way. And it's so big and it's so like impactful and it feels awesome to use. And then he has his D button where he takes over an allied keep or destroyed enemy keep and becomes this raid boss and has this like massive like half global abilities where he can rain meteors down and explode the earth and swipe and stun everyone and stuff. And it's so cool, like, when you have characters like that have these massive, impactful abilities. And I love this character for having that kind of thing, for having such, like, global pressure, for being this massive, just, like, it seems like the kind of thing where in a lot of other games, you would balance it, like, if they were to make a League of Legends version of this character, you'd balance it where it's, like, the character reaches out his arm and pushes them back, you know, a couple meters, and then if they collide with terrain, you stun them or something, and it would be, like, that's insane, that's a crazy ult. But for Stukov, like, for HOTS, it's, like, they just go back infinitely until they collide with something, which could be, you know, you could only be, like, moving them a little bit, or if you line it up really well, you could completely negate them from being in the battle at all and make it a 4v5. And I think that's really cool. I was thinking today about an interesting, thought experiment between the two games, between LoL and HOTS, at least. So Urgot has that ultimate where it's a channeled ultimate where he swaps places. And it's, like, that was, even though it's not good, and even though they're reworking Urgot, you can see the design of League where it's such a powerful thought. It's like in designers' head, such a powerful ability that they have to make it channeled and have range like that. And then you have a character like Artanis in HOTS, where his E button is on like a low cooldown, and it like shoots out a swapping projectile that will swap characters, and he can use that with his like his Q, which is the move forward, move back slide, to like dash into the enemy team, throw out the projectile while he's on his way back, and then swap at bizarre, insane ranges, instantly swap over terrain and stuff like that. Like the insanity of that, and like how if that character were in LoL, it would just be completely insanely broken. It's really interesting to think about how like LoL ults are, you know, basic abilities in a lot of cases for HOTS characters.
Yeah. HOTS thrives, yeah. I mean, it's surprising also as a Blizzard game, because when you think about Blizzard, like I guess one of the things that I think of is like safe.
Yeah, metered.
But Heroes of the Storm doesn't feel as safe as other Blizzard games in terms of the way that they approach characters. They actually let characters do some pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, a lot of characters
promising for Overwatch. I know it's not the same people, but it'd be promising for future characters in Overwatch.
Yeah, I really like that. And it's also like you see the current, like HOTS has changed so much from the beginning days where they were just adding those basic characters. Like you see so much of a difference between the current characters that are insane and have all these global abilities and are big impactful characters when used right, and some of the more beginning characters where it's like they're still good, they're gonna put out good damage, but they can't really move, and they don't really have that like global crazy abilities that some of the new characters have. Like the new characters are more Marvel-y and Marvel vs. Capcom-y. I hate to say that now because I know how bad this new one is gonna be, but I think it makes sense what I'm saying.
You think that they have Marvel versus Capcom Ultimates?
Yes. Like, the Marvel design is, like, everyone is broken, and that's how we balance it. It's, like, instead of trying to get, like, it's not Tekken where it's, like, instead of, like, adjusting frame data to be perfect, instead of, like, slowly iterating on it and making everything very safe, you with Marvel, it's, like, well, it's totally broken that someone would have this ability, but the balance of it is that everyone else has broken things, and that's what it's supposed to be like. So I kind of like HOTS new characters being crazier, wackier, more situationally impactful, and like almost like situationally broken, because it adds a lot to the game. It makes like the new characters and some of the old characters that gotten reworks and stuff or still hold up well feel really, really cool and really impactful throughout the game. So, Sun's out, Guns out. They're drawing tomorrow. So we'll see if any of us want a computer.
Can't wait to win my computer.
We should win one more game for good luck.
Hell yeah.
I plan to win a game tonight.
I plan to, too, as well.
I'll see about that.
Nice.
I'll see about that.
But for now, this podcast isn't over.
It is not.
A few more things to talk about. I want to tell you guys about a game that I've been playing. So
PUBG.
On the Steam Summer Sale, I decided to pay full price for PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Excellent.
Okay,
too many deals. I want to buy something that's not on sale, something I can trust.
So the thing about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is that it shouldn't interest me because I don't care about survival games and I don't care about Battle Royale and I've never seen Battle Royale. But for some reason,
wow, go see
everyone.
It.
Everyone kept talking about it, so I had
go to go see Battle Royale.
Yeah, go to your local theater and see Battle Royale.
Is Terrace House like Battle Royale?
I hope so.
I love Terrace House.
Terrace House is great, but we're not talking about Terrace House, and unfortunately, we're not talking about Little Witch Academia. We're talking about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is a game that somehow works. It somehow really, really, it succeeds in what it wants to do so excellently that it makes you wonder how any of these games came before Battlegrounds. There are so many things that Battlegrounds does correctly that it seems like this is the game that is the game by which all other Battle Royale games will be judged. and by which all, this is the game that will be copied. This is the game that will, a AAA game will copy this formula and attempt to do this. And Battle Royale or Battlegrounds will have done it first. So let me explain the premise of this. So the premise of this is that you queue up to play a match. You play either solo, duo, or in a squad of four people. And then you fly on a plane across a deserted island. The island is massive, and the trajectory of the plane is different every time, which means that the options for where you can land during every game is different every time. Like I said, it's like a massive island, so you couldn't possibly cover the whole thing in one round unless you happen to find a vehicle. So you're dropped onto this island with 100 other people, and your goal is to be the last one left alive, or to be the last squad left alive. So you drop off with no armor, no weapons, no nothing, and you need to start scavenging. And you need to do it pretty fast because other people are looking for stuff as well. And the loot is randomly placed, so you can't just rely on one place being your go-to spot. And also, as you play the game, the play area for the game gets smaller and smaller. So there is this electrical field that slowly closes in and makes the map smaller and smaller to push the remaining players closer and closer to one another, to force engagement and to prevent camping. So one of the other parts that's really important is that this circle that gets smaller and smaller is always going to be shrinking on a different place. And you can never guarantee that any one place is going to be safe. So every single match unfolds differently. So this is sort of like a multiplayer game that is like perfectly fused with like a roguelike, because the weapons that you're finding every time are going to be different. The supplies that you're finding in terms of first aid kits or bandages, or in terms of boost items that allow you to increase your accuracy and your speed are going to be different. The vehicles that you find are going to be different. Sometimes they're going to be non-existent and you're going to need to walk. Sometimes you'll find a bike. Sometimes you'll find a dune buggy. Sometimes you'll find a boat. The guns that you're going to find are different, and the attachments for the guns that you're going to find are different. And no matter what, you need to sort of play to the strengths of what you find. And that makes it so that every game is really interesting.
You have enough time to adapt, I'm assuming, with the different ways that the circle closes or the different stuff that you get.
Yeah.
You don't ever feel screwed by that, I'm guessing.
Is it good? You don't feel screwed by it if you... Well, part of it is that like you have options from the very beginning of the game. The biggest decision that you make in the game is where you decide to let out of the plane. Because you let out of the plane and then you can move in any direction. You could sort of start to move towards something and then you can let go of your parachute. And there's certain areas where you're guaranteed to find a lot of loot. So for example, on the southern side of this island, there is a military base. And the military base, it has a lot of loot spawns. And what that means is that, yes, there's going to be good stuff there, but it's also going to attract more people. There's one area, and it's like the school, and guaranteed at the start of a match, 20 people are going to be at the school, no matter what. 20 people, at least, are always going to end up at the school, because the school is in the dead center of the island, so regardless of where the circle begins to close, the school is always close enough. And because so many people drop there and congregate there, you can always guarantee that if you can get off some early kills here, that you can make something happen. You can get the gear together that you need to progress through the game. And I gotta say that it's one of the things that is so fascinating about this game is really the amount of downtime that you have and really the sense of dread and terror that occurs in the game of not knowing exactly where people are going to be and what kind of weaponry people might be carrying or how you're going to interact with people. Or just like let's say you're driving and the circle is closing in and you know that you don't have any medicine. So regardless, you need to find somewhere that has medicine. And you notice that you're driving through a town and one of the doors is open. So you don't know if somebody is currently in that area and if you're in danger, or if the entire area has been looted by somebody and you're going to waste time going through it and not find anything. And just not knowing where people are gives you this sense of dread. And also collecting good items, it makes you feel stronger, but it also puts weight on you because you know, okay, now I'm really well equipped to handle any situation, but at the same time, I don't know where anybody is. And somebody could be 500, 600 meters away on a hill with a sniper rifle. And they could take me out at any time if I'm too foolish to consider that. Mm-hmm. And sure, there are ways around that. You could maybe have like a really powerful helmet that prevents that from happening. And you could also count on the fact that this game uses real bullet physics and bullet drops.
Okay.
And in order to actually shoot someone who's 600 meters away, you need to adjust your scoping, and they need to actually be very skilled at the game in order to make that happen. But it's just the not knowing that is just so exciting, and it makes every match of this so interesting and exciting. And the other thing that is just so amazing about this is you click go. You say, find me a game, and it puts you in a game instantly. This game is so popular, and this game would absolutely not work if it wasn't as popular as it is, because this game feeds off of the fact that it is so easy to just say, one more game. I'll do one more game.
And how long do they last?
So it depends, because you could be taken out instantly, right? And that's it.
What happens when you get taken out, by the way?
You die. That's it. You leave the match.
Okay.
Go. You requeue.
You don't see anything?
No. No kill cam. Kill cams would be kind of cool in the solo mode. Kill cams would be really bad in the squad mode. But I could see in solo queue that kill cams might be useful, because that would help you gain some situational awareness. But in squad play, I think that it would be totally messed up to have kill cams for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say...
What's the length of a match that you like, maybe? I mean, just, do you find you frequently survive for more than half an hour?
I don't think they go that long. I would say maybe 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay.
I will say that, like, the start of the match, a circle doesn't really, the circle closing in on you doesn't matter for, like, 5 minutes. So you're safe for the beginning of the game, at least from the terrain. But another thing that they do to promote movement is that there will be bombing zones where I think that this is based on having players in that area, they will start doing a bombing run over that area where players need to move out of it or they're going to be in danger of dying. So it sort of warns you, the map starts to blink red, and then you know that in the next minute, bombs are going to start to drop and you need to move. Another way that they encourage player movement and dissuade camping is airdrops. So every so often, a plane will fly over the island and will drop a care package. And that care package is guaranteed to have weapons that can only be found inside that care package, which is a really nice touch and a really neat touch. Also, explosives in this game are pretty good. The frag grenades are pretty good. There's destructible environments with doors and fences and things like that. So if you find that a character is sort of camping behind a door or something, you could just break the door. And I know that they're adding some more destructibility to the environments that I think will work with that. Currently, there isn't bullet penetration, which I think is actually somewhat of a good thing, because there's so much ammo that it would be really easy to just
fire
spray
into every room
places
and then lose the effect of like being able to hide behind something just because everyone sprays into every room.
Yeah, but this is really just like a when you think of like the best parts of DayZ, I remember when I first played DayZ, and there's so much running around in DayZ, and it's so boring for that reason, but the actual interactions with players are really fascinating because you don't know where anybody's going to be, and everybody is a bag of loot. So everybody running around, they're just like moving bags of loot that you get to kill and open up and improve your current situation. But those moments are so few and far between in DayZ. But in this game, every moment is that. Every moment is, what am I going to find? Is somebody here? What do I do? And there are so many crazy moments of like tailing people, of knowing, okay, I have a shotgun and I'm running to the red zone. I'm running into the safe area, but I'm not there yet. And I also see over the ridge, somebody else is coming over, but I can't engage them because I only have a shotgun. So I'm just going to quietly trail them until they think they're safe. And then I'm going to take them out.
Or you could see if other people get in a fight with them.
Yeah. And this happens. Like sometimes I'll be trailing somebody who's trailing somebody else. And as soon as he opens fire on them, I'll wait to see. And maybe if I'm very lucky, the person who I'm trailing will kill their target. And then I can kill them. And then both packages are mine. And that's really awesome. Or sometimes I'll see somebody run into like a small shack and start looting that shack. So then I'll just throw in a Molotov cocktail and then I'll just wait for the kill feed to light up and go in and take their stuff. And you know, this is a game that I feel is so interesting that it's really going to appeal to people who maybe don't even play shooters or maybe don't even play PC games. And part of it also is that I've been playing with my roommate Kevin, and he, you know, has been out of video games for a while, but the premise of this game is so interesting that he's been really drawn into it. And watching him play, this is such a interesting and good game to spectate. And I think that's why it has such a wide viewership on Twitch, because it really plays out like a horror film of like, maybe you see something that they don't see and you're like, oh no, don't go in that house. Or I saw somebody in the window that they didn't see. Oh shit. But when you're actually playing with them side by side and you can spot for them, it's really to your benefit. And both Kevin and I, we haven't won yet, but both of us have placed in the second place twice. So it was down to us and one other person once each, and we lost both times. But it was really cool, and it feels like even just making it into the top 10 is like super satisfying and awesome. And I really want to win. I really want to. And I've also been watching Kevin play with squads. And you can rent and you can queue up with a set of random people. And it's kind of interesting because you get a feel for how other people play and how other people think about the game. But my favorite moment so far is that Kevin's in a squad and the squad decides that they want to drop at the military base. So they get kitted out with a lot of really good gear. Among the good gear they get is Kevin finds a crossbow. And now that they have all this stuff, they have to make their way from the military base to the safe zone. So they all load into a Jeep and they start moving there, and they're crossing this bridge, and it's like, it's a super long bridge. You know, it's like a half mile bridge.
Like the Tower of Elden from Twilight Princess, which is also a Smash Brothers map.
Yeah. So they're on this bridge traveling and they see another Jeep starts picking up on them. And the other Jeep is full. It's got four players in it. So the Jeep, they're exchanging blows, and Kevin fires his crossbow. He kills the driver, and it veers off the side of the bridge. And they lose their car. They lose their driver. The driver is dead. And then the entire, you know, and then people in Kevin's squad are just like, holy shit. Because they essentially just took out four people with one crossbow shot.
That's pretty insane. How just is like, he so good at this? I don't understand.
Well, sometimes you just... It was a lucky shot, man.
What would you do in real life?
Part of it is like not in the shooting, but in the strategy. So that was a pretty good shot. But mostly the way that he gets through it is through just... consciously thinking about his decisions, when he's going to move, the type of places that he's going to go, how to best avoid other people, or how to kill people and be opportunistic about it, as opposed to having great firefights, really just optimizing on people's poor situations,
mm-hmm.
is sort of the way that he's succeeded so far.
It's about having a superior intellect, Kirby.
That which he does. He has incredible knowledge of history. Of like mundane history facts, which he's able to deploy.
One of the coolest parts, really, is also just like the fact of the map. The map is so massive, but like you really do get to know it, and like you get to have your favorite spots in the map, and like spot of like, oh, I can always rely on this place to be dependable or something like that in terms of loot. Or you remember certain things about the map. And the map has all of these really interesting landmarks in it. So like on the northeast side of the map, there's this giant castle. And then in the middle of the map, there's all of these busted ruins. And in one of the seaside towns, there's this really large and really and very transparent diner where everything is just glass. So you can see everything that's happening outside. There's like a power plant that's pretty interesting to go through. There's a series of underground tunnels and underground bunkers. There's the hospital, there's the gymnasium, the apartments, and there's just all of this really fascinating landscape, this broken down airplane that is actually akin to the airplane that you fly in on at the start of the match. It's just so, the landscape is so fascinating, and I'm excited to see what the next map they add is going to be like. This company that produced this game has already opened up a second office, and that second office is working on a desert map. So I'm interested to see how that different map is going to affect things.
I would think that'd be so huge, the maps in that game. Like, such a big addition to the game.
Yeah. To be honest, like, I can't recommend this game enough. I think that it's super fascinating. It's super fascinating just to play it so that you can watch it on Twitch and better understand what's happening. Because I think that the community for this game is only growing. It recently had its peak hours within the last couple of weeks, has been like its peak player count. And it doesn't seem like it's falling off. It seems like the developers of the game are really listening to the community. They recently overhauled the way that loot comes out, and they have added some new weapons to the game recently. And it seems like stuff just keeps getting added. This is an example of early access done right. And it's also, because this is an early access multiplayer game, I don't think that you run into the same problems that you do with early access single player games, where you feel like you're better off waiting until the game is actually released. I actually feel like now is a really good time to jump into this game, because I you know, the game is going to develop and it's going to change. And it's really interesting to see where the game is at now to better orient yourself before figuring out where the game is going.
What does early access really mean for a game that will presumably be evolving throughout its whole life?
This game is it has some funny and awkward bugs, especially with vehicles and with physics.
Okay. So it's more of a, from a technical standpoint, that it's early access rather than like it feeling whole as a game.
Yeah, and I think that right now, like, some of the bugs can be charming. I mean, sometimes they can cost you the game. Like, one thing that I've found problematic is that if you are in a car and the car is moving and you get out of the car, you instantly die. No tuck and roll, no nothing. You just die. And I feel like that could be improved.
I guess
there could maybe be something else with that happens, where when you get out of a car, you don't instantly die. Sometimes the car will just flip over and explode immediately. I don't know. There's really good. One thing that I've really enjoyed about getting into this game is really just like absorbing the content on Twitch and on YouTube, and watching all of the like highlight videos and stuff like that, of like great shots, and also just like great physics problems of like someone is driving down the road and they collide with another car, and both cars like fly off like a mile away from each other, a mile up into the air, and then they just fall down and explode, and both players die.
Send those bugs to Agatha the Bug Princess from Twilight Princess.
I know. Is this Players of Known Breath of the Wild? Is that what you're telling me? Is it like Breath of the Wild in its gameplay, but co-op, but competitive Breath of the Wild?
Yeah, there is like emergent gameplay in like the way that you interact with people. I think that, you know, most people are used to like the idea of like, okay, this game is a shooter, so the way that I'm going to interact with people is shooting and killing them. But like, there is something to be said for also the avoidance of people, or just like the way that you can deceive people in where they think that you're going to be, or the way that you could actually like ambush people in ways that don't organically occur in other games. of like, you know, in other games, it's like, okay, if you're playing Call of Duty and you see somebody, it's almost always correct to just start shooting at them. But in this game, it's that's not always the case because there's a discrepancy between gear and things like that. So you need to be clever in your approach and work towards your strengths. And I think that there's something to be said about that, that makes it more than just a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And I really recommend it. I think that this would be a really interesting game to play with other people. So if you guys got into it, we could totally play in duos or squads. And I think that it would be really, really fun. I think that this game is really something. I've put 11 hours into it. And for me, I would say that's a lot for the amount of like, for how busy I am.
Well, that is that Players Unknown's Battlegrounds is?
Yes.
Well, if I may have the floor, I've been playing the Final Fantasy XIV expansion, Strongbloods. And I got to a part in the story that is like super fascinating. And it's my favorite like story beat I've ever played through in an MMO, like really, because it's not a high bar to clear, to be honest. But you go to this, like, the whole concept of Stormblood is that you're going to this this faraway land of Doma that's like all, you know, Japanese and Eastern inspired of this world, and you're trying to build an army to be able to kill the empire that has taken a foothold over there. So you like ally with this like fallen prince, I guess, who wants to take back the land for his people. And then you go around to all the areas and like gather all the tribes and create a massive army to be able to take back the castle and win back the land. But there's this one part that was so cool. It was like you go to this awesome, beautiful area called Azim Step, and I guess I don't know how much I want to say because I don't know if James will eventually do it. I imagine he probably won't. But it's this like beautiful like plains area that's in this like that's like mountains, every like surrounded by mountains, and there's this giant like bowl in the middle of it where that has like a tower at the top, and these people, like this race of people, Zayla, are scattered all around it in different tribes, and at the end of every year, they fight, they start at their where their tribe's villages are, and then they all walk to the center of the area and fight over this like patch of land where whoever stands on the patch of land for a set amount of time becomes the new king, and their people are like the people who dictate what happens to all the other races for that year. Like, once they become king, like, the person who stood there becomes the Kagan, like, the king of them. And then their race is, like, lifted up to be, like, the upper class of this group of people. And it was just so cool. Like, you end up in this, like, giant... You end up, like, allying with this one really weak group. And they're like, yeah, sure, you can fight for us. We never want to fight in this thing because it's too bloody. And then the entire... After a really long buildup of, like... meeting all the different races, all the different tribes, and meeting their leaders and everything like that, and seeing like what makes the tribes tick and their different philosophies behind leading once they win or lose or whatever, the entire zone becomes an instanced like battleground. It becomes a NPC version of Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, where you start off with your tribe that you're allied with, and then you move it towards the center while all the enemies are like attacking and meeting up with you, and then there's this massive battle in the center where it's like all the leaders of the tribes are there, and they're like doing crazy stuff, and they're big ridiculous bosses, and then there's like 50 enemy NPCs on screen at any time, and they keep running in as you're killing them. It was so cool. And then I don't even know if I want to say the next thing, but it was very awesome. It was really, really cool. It was very exciting, and the game has been getting better because I explained that, like, because of the ability pruning, they chopped off so many abilities that the game got kind of boring at 60, and it was because the abilities that they added in from 60 to 70 for a lot of the classes are so important that it's like they cut out some of the core things you would want that class to have and then gave them back to you in different ways. So now that I'm level 68, I actually have most of the really cool abilities, and now it feels like a better game to play, and the instances have been really good, so it's all been pretty good. That's pretty much it.
Cool. Thanks for the update.
Indeed.
How's it all playing out with the overwhelming numbers of red mages and samurais?
I mean, it's fine for me, because I'm a tank, so like it's awesome. I get into instances instantly, and I do whatever I want. Like, I can always find a group for anything, and that makes it really fun. And the samurai and red mage are performing really well right now. They're probably kind of broken. So being in an instance when you get like two samurai or samurai and a red mage is like really nice, because you can just clear it really fast, because they just really do a ridiculous amount of DPS.
Yeah, man. In high school, everybody first picked the samurais and red mages for flag football DPS. But then I would get picked as the secret tank, just like you. I would get pulled into the group, and I would just catch a ball, because no one would be, really paying attention. And yeah. I would get a touchdown.
That's how you sneak by. Everyone else wants to be the samurais.
I would impress some of the more athletic kids by doing that. Wow, Sean can hold something and move at the same time.
It's incredible.
No one knew.
That was always secretly. That you fooled them into thinking your weakness was the ability to hold and move. There would be times where during lunchtime, you would get your food and then you couldn't move with the tray. You'd have to have a friend move it for you, because you weren't able to walk with the tray at the same time. But it was secretly a ploy to make you an all-star at flag football, and no one knew.
Yeah, I was just playing my role. I called myself the Dark Knight of flag football.
I've always called you exactly that, and I didn't know why until now.
You know what's really exciting that I don't know if it matters to you guys, but it matters to me. Platinum Games today teased Wonderful 101 coming to the Switch.
Oh, yeah?
And that's really exciting for me, because I thought
Wonderful
that was...
Wonderful 101 or like Wonderful 102?
I'm going to pee while you say this, because it's not exciting to me.
So what I'm assuming it's going to be is I think it's going to be a sequel to Wonderful 101 that will include Wonderful 101 with it, remade for the Switch. And this is something that they did when they released Bayonetta 2 on the Wii U, and yeah. Bayonetta 2 came with Bayonetta 1.
Okay. And I think it's going to be a separate game, not just like a remaster or like a redo and expansion.
Yeah, it'll be tricky because the original Wonderful 101... had a lot of touchscreen features because it was on the Wii U. But I think most of the touchscreen features were also available to be used with like the joystick. Mm-hmm. Like essentially you're controlling like this crowd of people who are the Wonderful 101. And so you're like moving them around and you're doing like different shapes sort of to represent like different like almost like Power Rangers stances. You know how like when powering, they all like stand in different ways, or they like move their hands in different ways. So like the way that you would like trace on the touchscreen is like sort of indicative of that style.
Yeah, they have to hold their hands right so they can become the Megazord.
Yeah, it's essentially the same thing. So if that were on Switch, that would be cool. Also, Splatoon comes out in like 2 weeks on Switch. Splatoon 2.
I wonder if everyone who's playing ARMS will just move over to Splatoon.
I don't know, but I'm looking forward to Splatoon. I really did enjoy the first one. I know it would be nice to have more things to play on the Switch, just because I like the Switch so much.
I like the Switch so much, too. I actually kind of have been thinking that I'm more interested in that Mario game, just because it looks really attractive, and I want to play something on Switch. And I want to become a pizza.
Which Mario game?
Dunktown?
Dunktown.
Mario Dunktown. Donktown? Is it Donktown?
New Donk City.
New Donk City.
That's the real name for it.
I know. I don't know what happened when they named it. I played a weird game this week that wasn't very fun. And I know Sean...
Every time I log on to Steam to look at the summer sale, it's blasting my face with like... sexy anime games and visual novels.
Oh, you must be on my account. But
I've never bought any of those. I will not talk about whether I've played any. But I've never...
You have, in fact, played one.
There is one that I played. I regret it. I was naive.
I remember me what?
I played Katawa Shoujo.
Which translates to, like, crippled girl.
I didn't do any research into it, and I thought it was going to be, like, this really insightful, like, interactive novel about, like, loving people for who they really are. On
wow, Sean, I think I told you exactly what the twist was going to be.
And coming to terms with, like, people with having disabilities or, like, disfigurements. It turned out to actually just be, like, this really, like, bland high school simulator that ended with low-key sex scenes.
Yeah, it sounds like a visual novel, right?
So what's the game you played, Ryan?
I played Platelets and Plasma, The Giver. It's a very interesting game. It's an incredibly interesting game. I got suckered into it. I don't know how. They were like, I got a call that was like, hey, do you want to play Platelets and Plasma, The Giver? Can I pencil you in for a time? And then I was like, maybe. And they were like, we have you on file for having B positive blood. And we need that. We need the platelets for that because they bind well with other blood and everything. It's important to have B positive platelets. And right now there's a huge shortage of blood in general. It would really be in your blood has been used to save lives. And I was like,
Kirby's a blood magic support character.
First of all, I thought how funny would it be if they called you for like a donation thing and they were like, we used your blood. It didn't save the person's life. They still died, but it was important.
That's, I don't know how that would make me feel.
Like, I wonder if that would frustrate people. Like, what the fuck is the point of this? Like, I can't believe one of the times I went and they wasted my good, precious red juice, my life juice.
God, it's hard to think about.
But, I decided to do the platelets and plasma thing. It turns out to be very much like a video game, except, like, a low form of torture, like a mild form of torture. So
like a video game, a competitive video game.
Like a competitive video game. I mean, there's competition to it. I actually beat this other person that I was next to, in two ways. First of all, I got off the machine faster than him because when I explain the mechanics of this game, it'll make sense how you can beat someone's time. Like you can speedrun Platelets and Plasma a little bit. Also he passed out afterwards and I did not. So I think I beat him in all ways that could be known. So obviously, you know, the setup here, it's just like a lot of other blood giving games, where, you know, a stranger sticks a needle in your arm and slowly siphons the life from you. But with Platelets and Plasma, the game,
Jesus Christ,
what, with Platelets, what?
How do people do this?
I did. I'm explaining it.
I mean, but how do you come to the idea or come to terms with like, yeah, this is, I want to.
Because you have to. I don't know. I'm an EMT. It's like an extension of what I do already. It's like maybe it helps people. People need blood. I do it because I've never given platelets and plasma before, but I give blood. And I do it because it's like, my main motto is like, be the change you want to see, even though I never am. It's like, if I don't give blood, then when there comes a time that I need blood, then like, I'm just relying on all the other people out there that are like, I don't want to do that. I'll stay home and not do that because it's my day off. And why would I want to go and get like a needle stuck in my arm and then blood drained from me? And it's like, because some people need to make that choice to be there. Because if everyone decides, like, I'll leave it up to everyone else, then there's never any blood. And then we have to find a synthetic blood. And then that's how the human race moves forward, is by creating a synthetic blood, because no one is kind enough to donate. But
that's what I'm holding out on, because I would rather just die.
With platelets and plasma, there's a machine that's like almost like a dialysis machine where... So, much of this was very confusing to me and is super bizarre. There's two tubes running from your arm. One is a return tube and one is a drawing tube. So like what the machine does is it draws enough a certain amount of your blood and then it takes all the platelets and plasma from the blood and then it returns the used up garbage back into you. So there's this meter This is true. So you have like a squishy ball in your hand, and there's this meter that's a pressure gauge, and you have to watch a screen for 2 hours. You have to watch a screen, and it'll say drawing. So when it's drawing blood, you have to keep squeezing your arm to create more pressure in your arm to be able to.
Oh my God, how do you stay conscious for this, dude? I'm getting so uncomfortable just listening.
How did I say conscious? I spent half the time. I had Triple D on the entire 2 hours playing. I had Triple D on the entire 2 hours, and Guy Fieri was in large part how I was able to make it through. Because there were points in this where I was just texting. Like I was like a friend of the show, Low Priority Jay, was there. He gave blood, but he was like, "No, fuck that. I'm not going to do plasma and platelets because I don't want to be on a machine for 2 hours getting blood drained." So he finished up early and he came over to me and he was like, he's like watching it. Where's that going with this? Watching me like watch Guy Fieri, and I was getting like kind of like a little like loopy, a little like slurring my words and stuff. And I was definitely, it was not a good thing. It was not like an exciting like thing. It was not like a really weird high to chase. It was more like I just felt bad. So I was like texting people. I like texted Sean. And it was like I felt like I was on my deathbed with my hour of need. I was like. Like anyone, talk to me. I'm in constant pain, and it's drawing blood out, and then it's returning the blood, and it's so annoying. It's so constantly annoying.
I'm sorry I wasn't there sooner. And that
I know you weren't.
To comfort yourself as your soul and life physically drained from your body was Guy
Fieri. Guy Fieri. So
a man to hold your hand as you glimpse the pearly gates. Like what?
It was Guy Fieri. It's weird that
I
saw.
Really
I
there at the end of the light.
Yeah.
The light,
right.
The tunnel is just the sun shining off of his bleached hair.
It is
reflected off of his glasses in some sort of intense like lens flare.
You know they say like you could like this was just like him. This was like the like a near death experience for me. But it's like now I know what to expect from death, and also I might be watching Triple D as I'm passing out for the last time.
He's got a rack of stupid printed Hawaiian style bowling striped flame printed shirts, and he says,
"Dive right in.
Take my hand and take a shirt, friend.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner." Yeah. So
that's what they say when you win a Battlegrounds match.
I know, because they're big Guy Fieri fans. So I was half watching Guy Fieri on Triple D and Fieri, sorry. And I was playing Memorize very loudly, the Japanese learning game. And the person who had to like watch the meters on my dialysis machine seemed very confused and annoyed by it. But it was like, I can do whatever annoying stuff I want to right now. Like, this is about me right now. So if I want to loudly listen to Japanese learning exercises, then you will also sit there and listen to Japanese learning exercises with me.
I agree that donating life to humanity is just about you.
It is. It is. It's only for me. But the meter. Okay. So you have this meter, and as it's drawing, if you don't get the pressure gauge to like above 25%. Then it starts to overdraw your blood, which means like it starts to you feel like it like sucking too much out and there not being enough blood. So you feel like the veins kind of close. Like it's like so uncomfortable. So you really had to like make sure you got
this to the end.
You really got you had to get your pressure gauge above 25% at least for the draw. But if you're really good and you were like very, cause you could do better by being riding the gauge a little bit more, where it's like reacting quickly to the draw or to the return. So
were you gamifying this in your head as it was happening? Or
oh yeah, I'm gamifying it now. This is what I was going. This is what was going through my head when this
I know
was happening.
You're doing it now. I'm wondering if you were doing it on the.
Oh
table.
No, of course I was, because I had to beat this guy next to me. Because if you're getting your pressure gauge up, obviously you can draw quicker. And then when you draw quicker, you can return quicker and draw quicker again. Like, you're trying to cycle fast as possible to get off quicker. Also, there's a meter that shows how much... At first, it took plasma, I believe, and then after that it took platelets. So you're trying to fill up the plasma and platelets meter. That's when you're done and you can get off the machine. So, like, I'm watching this guy's and I'm trying to beat him because I know I'm drawing faster and cycling quicker than he is. So when it's doing the draw mechanic, you are trying to squeeze the pump your arm as fast as possible so that you can get as much blood rushing to your arm to draw blood quicker, because you get punished if you don't get your pressure high enough. So then here comes the worst part, pretty much, is the return is pretty bad. So after, you could see this, like, there's this blood gauge on the machine where it's this, like, transparent box that fills up with the used up blood that has already gone through the machine and lost the platelets and plasma. So once that box fills up is when it goes to the return mechanic. It goes to return phase. And then it's so uncomfortable. You can feel it going back into your arm, but it's cold and sad blood. And you can feel all of your veins, like, maxing out. Like, you just suddenly feel like there's too much blood in your veins. So it'd be like this weird, uncomfortable feeling of, like, you're feeling all the blood rushing around your body. It was pretty insane. And also, you really, during the return phase, you can't squeeze the ball, because if you do, you're fighting back against the blood that's trying to come in. So you have to, like, instantly recognize or get a good tempo, a good, like, timing on when you think the return phase is coming, so that you can stop, let the pressure gauge drop, so that when it goes to return phase, that the blood will go in quicker and you won't get that uncomfortable feeling of fighting against the blood, because that was really bad too. The two worst things is when you let the pressure gauge drop too much on draw and when you have the pressure gauge too high on return. So, like, I always had to ride this pressure gauge to make sure I was in the least amount of incredible discomfort. And that was giving platelets. I beat the other person who got on the machine before me, and then he passed out afterwards and hit his head. So I was the real winner that day.
I took after Summer Games Done Quick and did an 80% clear on that whole conversation we just had, and I had to take my headphones out a couple times because it was getting way too graphic for me.
I'm guessing that most listeners have tuned out at this point.
Can I tell you about the patient that recently died on me from vomiting blood?
I can't.
May as well, considering there's nobody listening anymore.
I can't hear about that stuff without just somehow imagining it in a way that feels very real and horrifying and personal, but also in my mental image is, like, overly animated and graphic and gory, where things are just exploding and popping and spreading and doing all sorts of just, like, awful.
And we just play Heroes of the Storm
emotions
now.
And feelings. It's so intense, man. I can't believe the way that you have become even comfortable with this kind of thing over time, being an EMT. Like, it's amazing.
I'm around so much gross shit. I just watched someone vomit and shit themselves to death. So once that kind of stuff happens, you really don't.
That's the kind of stuff we need for a new Overwatch character to mix things up.
Like a character how about with Stukov, who infects people with pathogens? Like, imagine realistically hot characters blood vomiting themselves to death and shitting out. Like, imagine.
We didn't talk about pizza that much.
That's the deal with games.
Are you hungry for pizza after this conversation? Because tomato sauce is like blood of vegetables.
No, I just know that millennials love pizza as a punchline. Or pizza conceptually, and I've been noticing.
Hey, everyone likes pizza. You know that. You know the thing you just said is similar to that racist argument of, like, oh, black people love chicken. You know, and it's like, but I love chicken, and everyone loves chicken. It's like insane for oldsters to say millennials love pizza. Like, yeah, and then you do too.
Know, call me prejudiced, but I've got a stereotype in my mind for the kind of person and the amount of people that have tattoos of similar looking melty slices of pizza and images of those tattoo art style slices of cheesy melting pizza are all over this new place that opened up in my neighborhood. And when I say new, I mean maybe 6 months ago.
Christ, I'm so glad no one is listening.
Okay.
I'm so glad no one makes it to this end, I assume. This gets this shit gets so bad at the end. It's like it's ridiculous sometimes.
With games.
That's the deal with the games. You can find us online at WTDGpodcast.com, on Twitter at WTDGpodcast, or on iTunes at What's the Deal with Games, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
Thank you, Ryan Gowan, crying for the... I love how we're really nailing it, but I ruined it. I wanted to go through it super quickly, but I fuck it up.
James crushed it.
I know. He did so good. That's why he did so well, and that's why I wanted to follow it up, but it sounded so funny to just do that. But thank you, Ryan Gowan, crying for the user music. We use the intro and the outro to Revive off the new album Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at the Room for Comfort Bandcamp. Was that good?
Thanks, guys.
And time. Woo! We finished the podcast in 1:55. That's a new record. Yeah. Awesome.
That's pretty good.
Good job, guys. Everyone, high five.
Pretty good, Ron.
Yeah, so that's a WTDG. I really wish that there were more runners. It's kind of dying lately, but if you want to check it out, we're all really helpful if you need any tips and tricks. It's really fun when you get used to it.
It's such a good community, right?
It's such a good community. We all talk about tips and tricks on WTD. Where's WTDWG.com, which is the correct form of the acronym, and you know, there you can find the newest strats and stuff. I think it's really kind of evolving. Like two months ago we were doing 213s, and now we're really on the 156 mark, and I think that check it out, please. And I want to say, lastly, thanks to Jody Roller, HH, and thanks to Mega Man X, Mega Man XOXO, and Bong Rit, 420 Blaze.
I actually did tune out and come back to you still. I thought it was over. I didn't know what you were talking about.
Because I'm still recording. And Baby Makes 3.